And away we go. Here it is, a Tuesday, April the 7th, 2020. 13 coming up on 14 minutes past the hour. You are tuned in to the Now program here on WWGH Radio. And today we are going to have a very good time because we are in strange times. There is no doubt about it. The word unprecedented is overused a lot, but in the particular situation we are in right now with the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic, it is the correct word. Unprecedented times are the times we're living in. And we've been very lucky to have been joined by a lot of great doctors, a lot of great politicians who have come on and updated us to what's going on in our area and as to what's going on in the country. But also during these times, I think, and everybody has said this, the news gets a little heavy. And from time to time, we still need to laugh. We still need to realize that the world is going on, and we still need to talk to friends who make us laugh and maybe even beyond that make us happy. We've been lucky to be joined in the last few weeks during this pandemic by Phil Donahue and Dick Cavett and Shecky Green and Marla Gibbs. And it's interesting to get their take because they are thinking people on what's going on, but also talk about other things, talk about careers, talk about funny moments, divert the conversation a little bit so we aren't constantly talking about this pandemic over and over and over and repeating ourselves. We know it's bad, and it is bad. The first hour this morning, we're joined by a lady who has become a really good friend, and I sincerely appreciate that. She is certainly a funny lady, great stand-up comedian, actress, writer, you name it, she's done it. And I'll tell you how good a friend she is. Where she is, it is about 5:15 in the morning. But she is here live this morning to share her thoughts on COVID-19 coronavirus and anything else we can stumble across in the next 45 minutes. What a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones a woman who is no stranger to talk, had her own talk show at one point in the 1980s, the legendary Marcia Warfield. Marcia, how are you?
I'll let you know in about 20 minutes.
Are you an early morning person, Marcia?
No, not at all. I was born nocturnal, and I've been nocturnal ever since.
Well, we certainly appreciate you getting up early with us this morning.
Well, you're welcome.
Marcia, I want to start with the heavy stuff here because that's where we are in the world. What you've lived a long life. What have you made of the last month in this country?
Well, I've been saying we've all lost our mind for quite a long time, but this is an amazing time to be in. It's mind-boggling to me how anybody could say, well, let's just wait and see what happens when somebody says, you know, it's a pandemic coming. And the attitudes that have been taken seem to have just made things worse. It's like, what decisions can we make that are good? Let's not do those. Let's do these. So here we are.
You know, the last pandemic, 1918, 102 years ago, We thought we had this under control. I talked with a doctor yesterday who said we should be on track to have a pandemic every 30 to 35 years. That didn't happen. Do you think that's why it's hit us so hard? Because there's nobody alive who lived through the last one.
I think that would be, no, I wouldn't think that at all. I think then, and today with the technology, we have instant information, you know, but we all have so much information in our hands, you know, in our phones. We have more information at hand than all previous generations combined. I mean, we have all of their information in our hands. So how we get here is that just makes me I'm just confused how you get here in such a technologically advanced day and time. It seems like at this time, there's really no excuse for something like this, for us not being ahead of something like this. I'm pretty sure they didn't know it was coming in 1918. No idea. Whereas we did, you know, and people knew, and the other pandemics that didn't happen or almost happened, steps were taken to, contain it. And those steps were ignored.
Well, and one of the interesting things, components to this whole thing, what the politicians did or did not know in January or February, I think that will all be flushed out at some point. But if we go back to the week where this got big in the United States, really, the news sources, if you went and checked out a newspaper or a television station or a radio station, not social media, the Monday of the week that this all happened, it was not front page news. Somebody had died in Washington. It was a senior citizen. It was not the lead story, certainly, on the newscast. But boy, by the end of the week, it certainly was. Do you think the media didn't get this quick enough?
No. I mean, I would think that as leadership, the last thing you want to do is alert the media before you take proactive steps, you know. I would think you would do everything possible not to alert the media until you take proactive steps. The problem is there weren't any proactive steps.
What do you make of where we are now? They keep saying this is going to be the worst month, the worst three-week period. This is going to be awful, possibly 240,000 deaths by the time this is over, a quarter of a million. What does that mean to you to hear that in America in 2020?
You would never imagine anything like this happening. Like I said, we have the technology. I mean, we have the means to get in front of these situations that it wasn't gotten in front of. This is where we are, and it's like you keep waiting for Rod Serling to, you know, just pop up and go, ha ha. And then just go back wherever he is. It's the Twilight Zone.
It really is. And one of the things, now that we do seem to be acutely aware of what's going on in this country, there are still people who are not social distancing, not staying 6 feet apart. What have you made of the human nature of this?
Well, we're getting mixed signals, you know. We're not getting a national directive, you know, that says this is what everybody has to do, and this is what we're going to do to fix things. We're having states bid against each other, nations bid against each other for basic supplies that it seems that we should be able to supply, to provide. We've always thought of ourselves as being manufacturing giants, as being, you know, quote-unquote, the leaders of the free world. And that we're not there is, like I said, in the, what is this, 21st century? Mind-boggling. It's amazing.
Do you think there is anything to, because I've thought about this since this all started, we had 9/11, but it was one day. Now, there were after effects of it, but it was one day on this soil that the actual event happened. Wars have not happened on American soil since the Civil War. Things like this don't happen on our soil and don't impact everybody. This has. It really is a game changer in a lot of ways. Do you think that will have lasting impact?
Oh, sure. You know, you don't shut down a country and then, you know, just open it back up all of a sudden months later. There's going to be a lot of ripple effects. And, you know, you like to think that there are people sitting around whose job it is to figure this stuff out and come up with contingencies. And then they're taken seriously and steps are taken to address the issues they raise. You'd like to think that, but the fact that we're all locked in our house means that the contingency didn't come up. It wasn't a word that anybody could spell, it seems like.
We're here on the West Coast, Marcia. You're out on, or we're here on the East Coast. You're on the West Coast. How are things being handled in your state at this point?
Well, we were relatively early, as far as here in Nevada, to close down. You know, they started closing the buffets first. But we're talking a matter of days, you know. We're talking, I went to Hawaii for my birthday, and there were no alarms being rung, but people were aware that there were rumors, you know, so even though we were all crowded on planes, some people did have masks and stuff, but there were very few. And we were being told it was only people from who had been to China. And so there was some awareness, but there wasn't any real preparedness. But then all of a sudden, when I came back, I did one week of shows at the Strat, at the LA Comedy Club. And then it was like, you know, this is getting serious. I don't think I want to do any more shows until it blows over, which was my decision. And then 2 days later, they shut down the casinos and shut down non-essential stuff here. So we were relatively early, but it was still too late.
It's interesting because when it's people's choice to stay home, that's one thing. But when people are told to stay home and the only place they can go is the grocery store, that's a different thing. How have you found that lifestyle that we are living in right now?
Well, it's really, you know, the natural habitat of most comedians. We, you know, like this, we have to stay at home. And people who write and do things like that, we spend a lot of time at home. It's not that much of a... if you don't count the financial aspects, as far as being home, it's not a big deal, you know. We get used to our own company. And the people who are more outdoors and, you know, social, they're having a hard time. And they're a lot more of them than us. So I think a lot of people are having a difficult time. And, you know, a lot of families and stuff, they don't really spend a lot of time together. Modern life says that mom, dad, and the kids don't really see each other all that much. And now they're stuck in the house 24/7. They're either going to get to know each other very well and, you know, re-enjoy each other, start to enjoy it, or they're all going to go nuts. And realize, you know, just because we're related don't mean I really like you a lot. So, who knows? You know, it's we're in unprecedented times in uncharted waters in a lot of ways.
As a stand-up comedian, who is a working stand-up comedian, is this something, when this is over, that you can go on the stage and joke about?
Oh, we were supposed to do there was supposed to be a big Netflix is a joke, historic special, you know, with as a festival, with like every comedian you've ever heard of. Was supposed to have a slot on this this special, and when I put it out on social media, I said, "I bet there won't be one coronavirus joke by anybody." Well, that was a joke. I knew good and well that it would be the topic of conversation. It will be as soon as comedians get to a mic. You're gonna hear every coronavirus joke you could possibly imagine. We can't wait.
As this is going on, do things just pop in your head that are funny about this, that are odd? What is the process with something like that?
Well, first you have to, I don't know. I've been too mad. Really upset at how, you know, just messed up things are, and so the humor is, it comes in spots, but most of it comes from just how amazingly awful it is, you know. I think most of the jokes you hear will be about how just unbelievably insane this whole situation is.
There are two parts of this, and I think there have been since the beginning. We have the pandemic, and we have the panic that has caused people to run to the grocery store, and you can't find toilet paper anywhere in the country at this point. Is the panic warranted to that degree, that people are stockpiling food and buying up all the paper products?
Well, I don't know. You tell people, if you go outside, you could die. It's really not, I don't think there's as much panic as there could be. You know, this is not just a little, well, if you go outside, you'll get a little cold. The situation is, we don't know exactly how bad it is or could be or who's likely to be stricken and who's not, who's immune and who isn't. Nobody's immune, so it's totally figure outable. I make up my own words as I go along, but we have no familiar things to hold on to. You know, it's like being drunk on a ship or something, you know. You can't write yourself. There's no way to orient yourself and feel secure. So we're just all trying to get along as best we can.
When it comes to the news, you had mentioned this, that you can certainly get news anywhere you want to get it now, and you can get it 24 hours a day from many different news sources. But there really isn't a whole lot of new news, aside from death tolls, people infected, those sort of things, how certain states are handling this. The news day to day is not changing a whole lot. We don't have a vaccine. We know people are working on it. Do you have to get away from it at points? Do you have to walk away from the news because it's just overkill at this point?
I don't know how you get to overkill in a situation like this. I don't think there's I don't know when you get to, well, we've had enough news. You know, there, if things are happening, if there are developments, do you people have to know? I don't think there was enough in the beginning, enough news, as we were talking about. There wasn't enough advance warning. There wasn't enough advance preparation. And so it would have been nice to know, and decisions made on the basis of common knowledge, you know, but that wasn't the truth. So we need to know what's being developed, what's happening, whether we should go out. We need a more targeted directive, you know. Now we're getting, we've got every state making their own rules and coming up with their own guidelines, and they can all impact every other state. So I think we need to know as much as possible. That's all we have now is information.
It's very interesting because as this goes along, and nobody knows the answer to this, from every doctor to health commissioner to politician, nobody knows. We all really don't know the end game. But as we see it now, do you think it's going to be as bad as we expect it to be? Or maybe might it not be as bad? Might we have done enough in the last 3 weeks to get ready for this by having people stay at home to where it won't be just horrible, as we heard in the beginning?
I don't know. I don't have any crystal ball into that. I would hope that that people start taking it seriously, that everybody does what is necessary to stay safe and keep each other safe. And if we do that, hopefully the projections that the smart people are giving us, you know, will come to pass. If they're saying if we do everything, we should be everything they tell us, that we should be at X point at X date in a best case scenario. But that's a best case scenario. And so we don't know. Human beings being who they are and being that it affects all human beings, you know, we have different responses to stuff, and some people are going to go along with it and some people ain't. And so we have no idea where we're going to go. We're not in charge. The virus is in charge. And as long as we think we're in charge, we're always going to be behind the eight ball, as far as I can see.
New York certainly has become the epicenter of this. We see the press conferences from Governor Cuomo. Chris Cuomo, the brother of Andrew Cuomo, on CNN has coronavirus, doing his show from home. People are being fined. Times Square is empty. When you see those pictures and you see what's going on in New York, what does it make you think about?
I think it's, you know, it's devastating. It's awful. It's, you know, I'm seeing on my timeline and news feeds and stuff, people who are not the Kevin Bacon separation. You know, the separation is a lot closer. You know, there are people that know people who've lost family members and things like that. And so it's sobering to me. And I live in Vegas. Imagine the Strip just deserted. Who could ever have imagined that? It's like I said. It's like a Twilight Zone episode. I keep waiting for, you know, Rod Serling to come on with a cigarette in his mouth and say and look down there and describe the world we live in. And that makes more sense than anything else I've seen.
Living during this is something, you know, interesting on a lot of levels. When we look back on this, just from what we know now, how do you think we are going to look back on this and possibly people who didn't live through it are going to look back on this time?
Oh, I don't know that history will be kind to us. Because this is so huge, you know, it's a pandemic. That word means everybody gets scared. That's what that word means. So I don't know how we can we won't be looking back on this like the good old days. I don't really see this as the opening to a new All in the Family, you know. People are back in the days of the plague. I don't know how we'll see this. I just hope that most of us get the chance to look back on it and try to make sense of it.
Not that any time would ever be a good time for this, because it's not, but the year 2020 is interesting. Timing is everything, and funny in a lot of ways. The Olympics would have been this year. They are canceled, postponed until at least next year. Well, this is a presidential...
Hello?
Yeah, hello? Are you there? Hello? Marcia? Are you there, Marcia? Hello? You know what? I think we lost Marcia. We are going to reconnect with the legendary Marcia Warfield here momentarily and come back. Don't forget, Mayor Scott Schertzer will be on in hour number two this morning, and we will talk to him about all kinds of things going on in the world. Maybe a little virus got in the telephone line there. You never know these days what's going on. Let's see here if we can get Marcia back. Remember, live radio here. And those things happen from time to time. So we are going to try to get Marcia Warfield back here momentarily on WWGH Radio. Don't you dare go anywhere.
1-800-222-1222. 1-800-222-1222. If you think it might be poison, then the first thing you should do is call 1-800-222-1222. Poison can be anything you're not supposed to take. Antifreeze, pesticide, the wrong drug by mistake. If you breathed a nasty chemical, been bitten by a snake, call the Poison Control Center hotline. We're here for you night or day.
For a poison or drug emergency at home or at work, just call the Poison Control Center hotline. We're here 24/7 with the expert help you need, free and confidential. Even if you think it's a false alarm, call
1-800-222-1222. 1-800-222-1222. If you think it might be poison and you don't know what to do, call 1-800-222-1222.
And we're back, 40 minutes past the hour, and I think we have regained communication with Marcia Warfield. Marcia, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I don't know what happened, but one minute you were talking and next minute you weren't.
Marcia, what I was talking about was, in this country, what do you think, are there going to be changes to how we deal with medicine, to how we deal with people, to our overburdened lives, as you talked about earlier? Families don't spend time with one another anymore. They certainly are now.
I would hope so. I would hope we would have some sweeping overhauls, but we are not there yet. We're not where people are ready to make those kinds of huge changes, I don't think. If we go another couple of weeks, though, I expect that people will start to clamor for another kind of approach, another way of life, a way of life that's a little more family-oriented or people-oriented and not so much profit-oriented, because as we're seeing now, you know, your money, it's a pretty good equalizer. Their money is not the big issue. We're all in the house. And the only difference is how nice your house is. But we're all stuck, and we're all, you know, like I said, we don't have toilet paper. You know, whether you live in a mansion or in a one-room apartment, you got to have toilet paper. And so maybe in the near future, we'll start to think about making sure people have universal basics so that this doesn't happen like that again.
One thing about this particular disease that has certainly been non-discriminatory is who it attacks. Prince Charles has tested positive. The Prime Minister of the United Kingdom is in intensive care right now because of this. Well-known baseball players, athletes, performers, actresses, most of an elderly age at this point, but they have died from this illness. Cause of death, coronavirus. It's certainly not skipping over anybody at this point.
No, it's, like I said, it's the virus. It's in charge. It tells us what's going to happen next at this point, you know, and we've seemed to lost the window of containment. Now we have to contain ourselves, and that's where we are.
As a person living in Las Vegas at this point, are you nervous? Are you apprehensive? I know you talked about being angry, but for your own personal well-being and that of your family and friends, is there a fear?
Oh, sure. Everybody I know at my age has a immune, what do they call it? Pre-existing condition, something that depresses your immune system. I mean, everybody I know at my age has that, so we're concerned and concerned about family members who are even more at risk, have other diseases, of friends and family who might have, heart trouble, cancer, need care, that they have to basically risk their own health just to get the treatment they need for their health. So, I'm concerned about that, and that does contribute to the anger and just bewilderment. But the other part of me says we have the technology, we have the human capacity to overcome adversity, and so when we start to think about it that way, when we start to think about it that it's about protecting each other as well as ourselves, not just ourselves, and when we get to that point, I think that's when we'll turn the corner and the curve will start to flatten, when we start to behave as if what we do can affect a lot of other people, whether we know it or not.
As a working stand-up comedian, at this point, when do you think you would feel comfortable to be back on a stage? What will it take?
It would take for Cardi B to make another song. There ain't no coronavirus. Maybe then I would feel comfortable. But that's not just for me. We're all very social. Human beings are very social. We really like being around each other more than we like to let on. We like to travel. We like to see other people. We like to meet other people. We're nosy and have whole industries set up just to satisfy that that need to be around other people, new people. And so most of the things we do are, you know, we gather with a lot of other human beings. And so it's going to take a minute for us to feel comfortable in those kinds of situations, whether it's riding a bus, going to work, going to a ball game, going to church, school, anything that entails being around a lot of people in environments we're used to being very comfortable in. And I think it's going to take a minute for us to get back to that. And I don't know what that will take. I don't know what that will look like.
In your own life, aside from staying in at this point and not working, what precautions have you taken? Is this a time to wear gloves? Is it a time to have the hand sanitizer? How has it just changed your day-to-day life?
Oh, for me, I try not to go out as much as possible. At first, I was going to the grocery store, trying to, but then people don't seem to take the 6 foot, directive very well. Most of us don't seem to be able to count to 6 feet, and people are too close in those situations. I wasn't really comfortable. So I'm trying to stay in as much as possible. When I do go out, I try to have a mask. I try to have a wipe in my hand at all times. I carry them. I carry the big container of them and wipe my car handles and stuff. Gloves, I finally got the supply. But I find I still need to sanitize my hands even if I'm wearing gloves. So, you do what you can and hope is enough. And so I've been doing what they say is effective. And so far, knock wood, so good.
Marcia, it's kind of interesting. Most of us would not have this problem. But being somebody who had a hit television series, has worked in front of people for many, many years now, were people still approaching you in the store, asking for autographs, wanting to take pictures? It's a selfie world now. Or were people a little more discreet because of this illness?
Oh, it's not because of the illness. I took so much time off. Most people don't even have a clue. They don't care. It's only when I'm in an environment like, doing shows and stuff, where people have a memory of 1980s and 90s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. They're whole generations of new people who don't know who I am or care. So now I don't have that problem that much before or after.
When the career was doing that well, being on Night Court and Empty Nest and all the great shows you were on, having your own talk show, to now, which time is more fun for you?
Well, any time that's not now is more fun. there's an elephant sitting on your face. Was this more fun when he wasn't? Yes, it was a lot more fun. There's so much that goes into the concept of happiness and contentment. As a young woman, I had a whole different perspective than I do now. I had different needs. I had different, desires. And throughout my life at different stages, I've had different, measures of happiness. And so it was exciting being young and too stupid to be scared and out and trying to make a way and doing pretty well. All of that was, fine. There was life happening, at every stage, of course, because everything is not always great. There's always something going on, that you have to deal with. But, on the whole, I was doing pretty well. Everything was okay. But then at this point now, like I said, I went to Hawaii. I'd never been to Hawaii. That was great. There are great things, good things in my life, and there's also this, big cloud over it too. So I don't know that happiness or contentment is really what I'm looking for. I'd much rather contribute something, whether it's something big or small, or Just something. And if it's smiles and laughter, that's great. If it's perspective or another way of looking at things, that's great too. But that's more what makes me feel good than really thinking about my personal comfort.
One of the tremendous aspects of this has been, and we're starting to see these doctors pop up on television shows and radio shows, is the anxiety, the depression, the unknown that people are feeling. Have you been able to divert that in your whole life during this, or how have you diverted that?
Well, I don't know about diverting the anxiety and stuff. At first, my biggest concern is awareness. You know, let's take this serious. Let's understand that we're going to have to make some real changes and decisions, and our lifestyles are going to be interrupted, and we have to do it, like I said, not only for ourselves, but for the good of everybody else. You know, we have to assume, whether we do or not, but we have to assume that we're all carriers, whether we're symptomatic or not. And when you take that position, and it's easy to see why you need to isolate yourself, why you need to quarantine, why you need to take the steps necessary. And so my focus, like I said, has been to try to use whatever voice and platform I have to say, hey, come on, wake up. Let's do this and get it done and get it over with. Others have stepped up to make the jokes and play the songs and do the concerts from home and all that kind of stuff. And I think I'm looking at myself in that regard more as a second shift, that once we're, a little deeper into this, I'd be in a better position to make the jokes and, do a little song, a little dance, a little seltzer down my pants.
When you see these concerts that are going on, because this has become a thing now with comedians as well as music performers, maybe primarily, do you think this helps? Have you watched any of these to get your mind off of this or feel better in any way?
I haven't. I've been, since I started doing stand-up again, I haven't really been watching other performers. I want my voice to be my voice, you know what I mean? And so I tried not to spend too much time watching other comedians. There's a risk when you do stand up that watching other people and you laugh and stuff, and then you forget where you heard stuff, and it comes back in your brain, unbidden, and you don't know that you heard it from somewhere else. And I don't want to be influenced by that or to inadvertently take somebody else's material. So I haven't been really watching a lot of other performers, but I'm aware of them and the watch parties and the, live Zoom performances and the Instagram and Facebook Live and stuff. And I'm grateful for them, but I haven't really availed myself of them as yet.
Marsha, you certainly have a presence on social media, and the people in 1918 during the last pandemic did not have that. How do you think that has helped people? How has it helped you during this whole event?
Well, it's a way for, again, social creatures. Like I said, beings to gather and share information and stuff and play games and talk. I've been doing a lot of that and playing music and asking silly questions, keeping myself and people engaged, that we have that means to do that, and I think that's a blessing, and that will be our salvation in a way. Not only will it get us through it as far as we can sit down and talk to each other, but it's where we'll get the information. Hopefully we'll get to the point that we can trust, and we'll make the difference in how we behave and how we get past this.
Marcia, earlier on you had talked about being angry for the first few weeks of this. How were you able to work through that, or at least get to a point where you were not as angry as you were when this started?
Well, I believe, you know, I believe that there's a reason why black people invented the blues. That we need to take the time sometimes to allow ourselves to feel things. And in our busy lives, you know, that we have, then they're so regimented because they are so busy. We have 5 minutes to do this and 3-4 minutes to do that. We don't have time to always just take a minute to wallow in our feelings and get past them. So we have a lot of unresolved emotions, whatever they are. We just don't have time to give them the free rein they need for us to get over. So I pretty much indulged it, you know, just let it be. Allow myself to be angry and then get past it and move on. And now, okay, now I know how to go forward.
Messages are important, Marcia. And before we wrap up this interview this morning, from you, what is your message to the listening audience, to the world at this point, about where we are right now?
I said that we're at the point where we got to care. You got to care. You know, the thing about all of the greatest artists, the greatest leaders, the greatest friends, is that they care. And we've got to begin to care about each other. And once we do that, then we'll turn a corner and things will, I believe, be a lot better for everybody. But first, you gotta care.
Very well put. One of the true, smart, funny ladies makes this program better every time she comes on. What a pal for getting up early this morning. Marcia, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure, and today has been an absolute pleasure.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And all the best to you. Take care of yourself.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. The legendary Marcia Warfield. We're coming back with the mayor in about 15 minutes.
Guava berries in it in the bottom, and it's called guava berry rum.
Oh, okay.
Drinking rum and Coca-Cola.
I do want to wish a happy 95th birthday to Jane Meadows. Turned 95. What?